It's Tuesday, January 11, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Obviously, all eyes and ears and hearts are still directed to Tucson, Arizona, where Representative Gabrielle Giffords remains in the intensive care unit of a local hospital after she was shot through the head by a would-be assassin on Saturday, an event that left six others dead and over a dozen wounded, and has reached to the heart of the nation. A nation that is now in some process of soul-searching as it tries to consider the meaning of these events. We'll talk about more of that in just a moment. In the first place, we need to look at the lives that are involved here. Representative Giffords is indeed in an induced coma, as those who are treating her are doing their very best to let her mind rest, her brain rest, after it has suffered this kind of trauma. There was good news, at least on the positive side, in the last few hours, as her doctors indicated that she had been able to respond to some commands, including holding up fingers and grasping a hand. And as they have brought her in and out of this coma, there is reason to believe that she will recover. Interestingly, the doctors are not defining that recovery, but as is so often the case with traumatic injuries to the brain, very little is known until the recovery actually begins its process. Our hearts go out to her and to her family and to all those who were involved in this murderous rampage. I think it's rightly called a massacre there in Tucson. One of the frustrating things about a story like this is that it takes on a life of its own in the larger media. And as is appropriate in this case, there's a primary attention directed to Representative Giffords because, after all, she was the primary intended target of this assassin. One of the things that has come to light in terms of this assassin is that it's clear that he did target Representative Giffords for some time. And even as he had been involved in the planning for this assassination, he had targeted her in particular. Now, when we look at the other lives that are involved, one of the sad things is, and you would certainly see this if you were one of the family members of one of the six victims who died in this attack, you would see this as a marginalization of a loved one. Now, in the larger world of the military, this might be called collateral damage. But we know as Christians there are no such things as collateral lives. Let's mention the six persons who were killed. First of all, Judge John Roll. In 2006, he was named Arizona's chief federal judge. You know, one of the things that hits closest to us in terms of a democratic society is attack upon those who are elected leaders. But even higher than that, in terms of the sanctity of the judiciary, is an attack upon one who is a judge. Now, the awful thing about this case with Judge Roll is that he had been the intended target of some death threats and had been under a good deal of supervisory protection and security from the U.S. Marshals Service until recently, but it now appears that he was not an intended target. After having all that security for when he himself was living under death threats, it turns out that in this case, he was just at the wrong place at the wrong time in terms of how we, humanly speaking, would understand this atrocity. A lot of hearts have gone out to the family of Christina Taylor Green, a 9-year-old little girl, a third grader who had just been elected to the student council at Mesa Verde Elementary School. She was interested in politics, and she wanted to meet her congresswoman. She was born on September the 11th of 2001. Gabe Zimmerman was 30 years old. He was the director of community outreach for Representative Giffords. He was to be married. Phyllis Schneck and Dorothy Morris were elderly snowbirds, as they're defined there in Arizona, having moved there from elsewhere. And unfortunately, they were victims of this would-be assassin of Representative Giffords because they were shopping for groceries and just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. The same was true for Dorwin Stoddard, who's identified as a 75-year-old pastor of Mountain Avenue Church of Christ in Tucson. Now, we as Christians understand that it is not simply a matter of fate. It's not just a roll of the dice. It's not just that we have unconnected and meaningless events in history. But when we look at this, we are reminded that these people did not anticipate what would happen on this day. Certainly not one of those who were victims. Only Mr. Loeffner, the suspect in this case, knew what he planned to do. No one else envisioned this day for what it would become. And that shows us just how out of control we are of the historical process. Now, there is something else, of course, about this particular controversy that is now reaching fever pitch in the country. Let me just share with you some headlines. Here's the headline of the editorial in USA Today. After shooting spree in Tucson, time to tone down the vitriol. Paul Krugman, the editorial writer for the New York Times, predictably has written one entitled Climate of Hate. You have here, by the way, a cover story, the front page of USA Today, "Have Nasty Politics Gotten Out of Hand?" Now, one of the things that we hear over and over again in a situation like this is a call for civility, and that's always a well-placed call. But we need to keep something in mind here. This was an isolated, insane, mentally deranged man who intended evil. We have no idea about his political background other than the fact that he listed among his favorite books, books like Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf and The Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx. There's no telling what was going on inside his brain, and it doesn't appear that it was politically coherent. Arizona is a hotbed of politics, especially on issues like guns and immigration. Did they have something to do with this? We simply, at this point, do not know. We do know that we are judged by our speech. Now, here's what's going on. On the left, there is this political pushback that what we have here is a sign that this is a sick society, a sign that this is now a level of a fever-pitched political rhetoric and vitriol that needs to be toned down. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot of political rhetoric out there that is downright embarrassing, and certainly in a situation like this is more than embarrassing. But the bottom line is that there never has been a period of time in American history when our political discourse wasn't filled with this kind of disagreement. After all, this is a disagreement in the form of the political arena, which is at the very basis of the most important issues that human beings can and do discuss. There are very real policy differences. And it is not on one side or the other that you have the discussion of such things as battleground states. And when you start thinking of politics in terms of warfare, that goes back all the way into the midpoint of the last millennium. So you look at this and you say, is there room for us to reconsider our discourse? Absolutely. On both sides of the political equation, I'll tell you, I'm embarrassed by a great deal of the rhetoric. And to tell you the truth, I have often just refused to go on a television or radio program simply because I do not respect the level of discourse that goes on in that particular context. But to make a line-drawing kind of argument here in which you say you can make a one-to-one equation of causality from America's current political discourse to this kind of act, well, that just doesn't make any sense, any more than it makes sense to blame Hollywood for John Hinckley's assassination attempt upon President Ronald Reagan. And in other words, you can't get in the mind of a deranged person and try to make sense. However, this is a good reminder to all of us that we will be judged by every idle word. And we should have as our ambition as Christians to leave no words that will leave us embarrassment. We'll be tracking this story with you. It has a great deal to do with where we're going as a nation. But, you know, sometimes a word from the outside is helpful, and that's the case here. From London comes an editorial in the Financial Times. It says this: "This is a moment for Americans to set aside recriminations and stand together." That's right. In a radio commentary I did for the Salem Radio Network this morning, I call for Americans to pray, especially American Christians. That's the one thing we know to do. There are families that are grieving. There is a woman here who is in grave peril. There are other wounded persons who are seeking their recovery. We need to pray for all those. After all, we know that far before we get to issues of politics and cultural meaning, there are spiritual issues at stake here, and that should be our first concern. Now, in terms of issues around the world, there are some things that just pale in terms of significance to the massacre in Tucson. But when we look at the worldview issues around us, it's clear that there's no shortage of things that demand our attention. Perhaps some of you have been noting all of the media attention to bird die-offs. There have been reports not only from Arkansas and other places in the United States, but around the world of sudden deaths of multiple, indeed even hundreds and thousands of animals. Now, the Wall Street Journal is out with a very important article by Gautam Naik that indicates that even the death of 5,000 blackbirds in Arkansas, the death of dozens of jackdaws in Sweden, it's not necessarily a sign of anything apocalyptic. As a matter of fact, biologists say that, quote, large mortality events in wildlife aren't that uncommon. As a matter of fact, even folks with the United States government indicate that 200 such mass deaths in terms of wildlife are reported to the federal government each year. Now, what does that tell us? Well, it tells us something about communication going on here. When blackbirds or jackdaws died anywhere around the world in even fairly recent history, it was a matter of mostly local news. But with the blogosphere, digital media, and all the rest, now there is an almost instant broadcasting of this kind of thing all around the world, and it's very easy for people immediately to try to draw some kind of conspiracy theory, some kind of unified field theory of meaning of these evidently rather normal events. Now, if I was living in Arkansas and 5,000 blackbirds dropped dead in my backyard, I think that was big news. Frankly, I think all of us would be curious to know what could happen and cause such a kill-off as this. But the bottom line is, the folks whose business it is to track such things tell us it's not apocalypse now. These things happen in wildlife, and they usually have a rational explanation. A lot of discussion in the aftermath of the Tucson massacre about guns. And one conversation about guns is focused on the state of Ohio, where a 10-year-old boy was arrested for killing his mother with a .22 caliber rifle. One of the things that came out in this particular news story is that this 10-year-old boy, who's described as having, and I put this in quotation marks, anger issues, also had four loaded guns in his bedroom. Now, there's a big debate going on about the moral reasoning of a 10-year-old. There's going to be a certain amount of controversy that's inevitable in this story when it's determined whether he is tried as a juvenile or as an adult. Even the video images I've seen of this boy indicate that he looks very young indeed. A news story out of Mali in Africa reminds us that sometimes a controversy looks very different on the ground than it does when debated in the ivory tower or in a situation of international relations, such as the United Nations. There in Mali, a particular city has been declared a World Heritage Site. It's an ancient city in eastern Mali, and when you're declared a World Heritage Site, it means you can't update your facilities. Now, located there in this city is what's known as the Great Mosque. It's also known as the Mud Mosque. It's an architectural marvel, no doubt about it, and many of the houses around the mosque are similar. But here's the problem. If you're living there, you want to update your home. You don't want to have a mud floor and no inside plumbing. But that's exactly what happens when the United Nations declares your city an official World Heritage Site. As one man indicated, who wants to live in a house with a mud floor? After all, when you're declared a World Heritage Site, it ought to be a way of improving your situation, not of forcing you into, well, here, permanent poverty. Well, it just goes to show you sometimes that what looks good from the sky tower of the United Nations in Manhattan isn't good for the people on the ground. And it also goes to show us that sometimes policies intended to preserve World Heritage Sites are not really good for the world peoples who are living in those sites. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.